Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring the culinary wonders of urban New Jersey with a tour through Newark. We speak to Frank Mentisana at Phillips Academy Public Charter School.
This idea of family style and made from scratch lunches continues to be a bit of an anomaly in the city.
We also hear from Gil Speyer from All Points West Distillery.
Newark used to have an incredibly rich beverage alcohol history.
And we'll tour Aero Farms, the world's largest indoor vertical farm.
We're growing using 390 times more productivity than field farming and 95% less water.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network to be amazed at the wonders of Newark. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
To All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. This is the 210th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a legendary chef and restaurateur based in New York City, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. And then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to keep pushing forward. Aim to be better. To reach new goals and thrive. Never settle for where you're at or the status quo, but instead, keep moving ahead, learning, innovating, and improving. Go beyond one's expectations and put your best foot forward always. With the right attitude and mindset, anything is possible. So onwards and upwards. That's my tip today. Now I'm so honored to have my guest here with me in the studio. It is Danielle Ballou. He is the chef and owner of several award-winning restaurants and the Feast and Feats Catering Company. While he hails from outside Lyon, France, it is in New York that Danielle has truly mastered the dining scene and is today considered one of America's leading culinary authorities. Over the last two decades, Danielle has evolved from a chef to a chef restaurateur with the Dynex Group, bringing his artistry to New York City restaurants, including his flagship Danielle, a two Michelin star Relais Chateau member, plus one Michelin star Café Ballou, Bar Ballou, Ballou Sud, I can go on and on, outside of New York. His seasonal French-American cooking can be found worldwide from London to Toronto, Montreal, Singapore, and beyond. Danielle is the recipient of multiple James Beard Foundation Awards. He's a top-selling cookbook author, a television personality, co-president of City Meals and Wheels, chairman and co-founder of Mentor BKB Foundation, and that's my summary of your resume. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Cherry. So happy to be here, and always a thrill to be here in Brooklyn at Roberta. And I'm going to be about to see the staff sitting down and having their family meal. It's nice. And
yes,
to be with you is always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to have you here. And I always like to start with my guests and get into their background. And I know you grew up in Lyon.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your childhood like? When did you know you wanted to be a chef?
I don't know. I started very young, but my childhood was in the countryside of Lyon, and I grew up on the farm. So I often helped my parents with all the tasks at the farm. But I also had a wonderful childhood as a kid, being passionate about many things. I tried to play sport, but then I started cooking at 14 professionally. And because the restaurant was only closed on Saturday and I had to work on Sunday, I had no more Sunday to play soccer or anything. So that kind of took care of things. And but I, from a very young age, I refused to go to cooking school because the cooking school, who was the most convenient to go for my parents at the time, was not very good. It was quite mediocre. And I made a fit after like 2 weeks at that school. I came back to my parents and say, I don't want to go to school and I want to cook. And so we managed through some friends, well appointed friends with Lyon's different chef. And she helped me get into one of the best restaurants in Lyon at the time. And that's when I started. And from there, you know, today I have a restaurant, Daniel, with Relais Chateau, which is the symbol of certainly the finest tables around the world and the finest small boutique hotel around the world. And to this day, I never work anywhere except on a very short occasion in a place other than Relais Chateau, Relais Gourmand. And so that association exists for, I don't know, maybe 60 years or more. And so it was my sort of guiding light, because the first restaurant I worked in Lyon, I kind of trusted the excellence of that. And I felt then pursuing into this sort of club of a restaurateur member of this association was like if they sign up for a certain commitment for excellence. So it was good. And also you could get refer from the chef you work to the next chef you want to work, which right. was important for me.
So I know before you came to the U.S., you spent some time in other parts of France, in Copenhagen.
Yes.
Who were your mentors along the way? And then what led you to come to, well, it was D.C. and then to New York?
Yes. So, of course, as a young chef, soon after my apprenticeship, I was 17, so I did 3 years apprenticeship. Right away, I wanted to work in a different place. And I went in Burgundy, south of Burgundy, in the Brest region, where Georges Blanc has a restaurant, La Mer Blanc. And at the time, the name of the restaurant was La Mer Blanc, and the mother of Georges Blanc was still in the kitchen on weekend with us, and there were still a lot of women working in the restaurant. And I really loved it because it was a departure from where I was working in Lyon, who was a little bit more man-driven kind of restaurant. And I really enjoyed it. I did 2 years there, 17 to 19. And after that, I wanted to see the south of France. And I already started to dream about star restaurants. Because both my Nandron, the 14 to 17 and 17 to 19, they both had 2 stars at the time.
Michelin.
Yes.
Okay.
And Georges Blanc became a 3-star later on. But I wanted to go to a 3-star. Coming from Lyon, knowing Bocuse and all that, which I worked on many occasions there, I needed to go and work in a 3-star. And so I asked Georges Blanc and say, I would like to go in the south of France to Roger Verger at the Moulin Mougin. It just had 3-star this year. And he made a phone call that afternoon. And I had a job for 6 months later. I had a job down in the south of France. And that was, again, entering the highest of culinary school in a way. And I did that for 2 years. And then Roger Verger, I wanted to go back to another 3-star, and he wanted to send me in Denmark. So I went to Copenhagen in the mid to late 70s. And at the time, it was not what we know of Denmark here in America today with the Scandinavian cuisine and all that. But right. It was very avant-garde. Their own chef from Copenhagen were already coming out of the Nouvelle Cuisine from France study, and they had worked in some of the greatest restaurants like me, and they went back home and started to practice a cuisine who was maybe more close to French cuisine at the time, but also with a lot of ingredients from Denmark. And for me, it was a wonderful experience. But I felt I was too young to settle in Denmark as a chef. I was 21 years old, and I decided to go to France again after a year and a half or 2 years and work for another three star. That was Michel Guérard in the southwest of France, where when I was 15, I went to the Pays Basque to work for 3 months because, as an apprentice, the owner I worked for felt, and at 15, you don't need vacation. You're going to go and work for my friend for the summer. So that was my supposed vacation. So I went there and I loved it, the southwest of France, right on the border of Spain and France. And so going back to the southwest at Michel Guérard, a three star, one of the most magnificent three star. Again, it just had three star a year before or two. So it was really the time to be there. Mm-hmm. And I did that and then went back to Denmark and started as a chef de cuisine with a young chef, a Danish chef, Jan Hurtigal, who was, it reminded me sometime of Brooklyn and those young restaurateurs who don't have too much money but have a lot of idea. It's very artistic, it's very bohemian, it's very laid back, but the food is fantastic. And that was Copenhagen in 1979.
Wow.
I don't think Rene was born. Maybe Rene was a young kid.
He probably was a little kid.
And Rene Redzepi was a young kid. So anyway, then a friend approached me and said, "Would you like to go to America? I have an offer to be the chef at the European Economic Community in Washington, and I can't go because I have kids." And it was a friend of mine. We used to work together. And I said, yes, why not? And I went to Brussels and did an interview with the new ambassador coming to Washington. And I did 2 years in Washington at the European Economic Community Embassy, where I was a private chef. And, you're 25 years old. They give you a car, a nice little apartment, a very lousy salary, but at least it was worth it.
And then from there you came to New York?
Yes.
So, it seems like you're going for the star restaurants and the best experience, and you're getting an amazing culinary education along the way. But there wasn't ever the, I want to move to New York City or I want to move to the U.S. It was more when opportunities presented themselves?
No, because when I was at Michel Guérard, already you have to realize that when I was doing my education in France in those three stars, those chefs were already world-class chefs, and they were traveling the world. They were going to Australia, they were going to America, California, Japan, they were all over the world. I mean, I was in Denmark because of Roger Verger. He was a consultant there, and I knew his food, and he wanted to send me there to just make sure that the food who was on the menu was proper to his cuisine, even if the ingredients were also indigenous from there. And so, this idea of traveling, I always had that in my mind. And I wanted to see America. When I was in Michel Guérard at the time, Michel Guérard was consultant with Régine, the club. There was a woman in France called Régine. And she had club all over the world. She had club in Caracas, in Miami, in New York, in Monte Carlo, in Paris, in Rio de Janeiro. I mean, wherever you party, she had a club.
Right.
So Michel Guérard was doing the food at the time. And today in New York City on 57 and Park Avenue, there is the Trump building, which I don't remember the name of the building, but it's right there on 57. There is a condominium now. Uh-huh. But there was Regine, the club, in the 70s here in New York. And so having met a lot of cooks who worked in New York briefly on and off for Michel Guérard and then back at Michel Guérard, we were always partying together and we were always talking about New York and America because they were always gathering together, talking about their time in New York. And also I had a friend who worked in the cruise ship and stopped in New York many times and always loved it. So for me, America was a place I wanted to see, I wanted to discover.
But you didn't know you'd end up here and creating your own restaurant empire.
Well, I spent 2 years in Washington. I had time to visit America. I did Florida. I rented a Toyota where you can sleep in the back, but it was not even like a it was not like a big wagon. It was just a pickup truck, like a pickup truck with a roof on it. And I could sleep in the back. And I was, you know, sleeping in all those camping place all around Florida and sitting down playing bingo with the old people there. Because, you know, I was single at the time, so I was just driving to visit the old state. And I said, no, I don't want to live here. So that was already crossed. I went to San Francisco. I loved it. I really loved San Francisco at the time. I went to Vegas, I went to L.A., I did California, I did a little bit of Texas also. So during those 2 years, I visited different parts of the country and I gave me a chance to know what I like most. And of course, I was coming to New York. And I think New York was really the city I wanted to be.
And what led you to Le Cirque? Uh-huh. I know, we're sort of, I only have a 45-minute show. So.
Exactly, and so New York... Dive into the Westbury Hotel for a year and a half, then the Plaza Athénée, which was a famous palace from Paris, opening in New York. And then after that, I was bored with hotel. And Paul Bocuse and many chefs from France came for a very big charity event here in New York. And they came to the Plaza Athénée at Le Régence, and it was the 60th birthday of Paul Bocuse. And I made an amazing dinner for all those chefs, plus a lot of media, a lot of people in the food world were there. And at night, they went to Le Cirque. And they were best friends with Sergio Macioni, the owner. And Paul Bocuse told Sergio, he said, you know, maybe you should change chef one day. And if one day you change chef, you should take Danielle next door. So, of course, didn't take too long for Sergio to reach out to me after a while. And because his chef wanted to leave, Alain Sayac. And so he reached out to me and I felt like, you know, it's not going to be what I wanted, but I'm going to do my best to make it happen. And I think right away, Sergio was very receptive for me to make change at this institution who existed and was very kind of old French. And try to progressively change. And that's what I did for 6 years. I just pushed everything and built everything and made everything mine, yet respecting what Le Cirque was about.
Yeah, well, definitely you did. And you started to get a lot of accolades at the time, too.
Yeah, and that was the time where Jean-Georges was starting in New York at Lafayette and... I was, you know, Le Bernardin was opening. There was the Meridian Hotel with Christian Delouvrier. And there were a lot of talent in New York. There was already, I mean, when I arrived in New York the first time, I was taken to Quilted Giraffe. I was taken to Chanterelle. And I was taken to the Four Seasons. And
list.
They said, we need to show you what are the three best restaurants who are the most different each. And Chanterelle was very French in a way, mm-hmm. and very sort of like a romantic place. Quilted Giraffe was very American, but with a Parisian attitude. And of course, the Four Seasons were this landmark of American restaurant, the real American. And I knew La Côte Basque also, and those French restaurants like Le Cirque, La Côte Basque, Le Cygne, La Caravelle. And so I always respected what they were doing and how successful they were at what they were doing. To me, that's something I learned a lot from them.
Absolutely. On that note, let's take a little break and we'll come back and we'll talk about you starting out as a restaurateur then on your own. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Serchois was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Danielle Ballou, legendary chef and restaurateur of the Dynex Group, including Danielle. So let's talk about this Danielle that you opened back in 1993.
Yes.
25-year anniversary last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
It's a milestone for sure in the life of a restaurant in New York. And, you know, it's also a place who started the way I wanted to start. It was a very vibrant, very lively, very crazy restaurant, very busy, but with great food. And everything was, I mean, for me, opening my restaurant, it was all about the food had to be a priority, the service had to be a priority, the team spirit was a priority, creativity, spontaneity, but also really taking pleasure at staying French and doing some good classics sometime and being inspired by French cuisine. I think I always say, you know, if I had been with a Chinese descent or Japanese or Korean or South American, Mexican, of course I would have dig into my roots. And I think for me, the resources of my roots has always served me plenty and gave me plenty also for creativity. Danielle moved after 4.5 years. I had this opportunity to come back to where Le Cirque was, where I was there for 6 years. And because Le Cirque was moving, and I made this very big financial decision because it was a huge risk 20 years ago to move Danielle and to the location he is today. But I had the opportunity to also buy the real estate. So basically, I look at that 30-year plan and I felt like, well, I better sign up now and work hard for the next 30 years.
A 30-year plan? That's
well,
that's
when
serious.
When you buy real estate in New York, it's not for just a little lease of 7 years, you know?
Yeah, well, you've certainly excelled. And when did you know, or when did you get the inkling that you wanted to open more restaurants and maybe not have fine dining?
Well, it's true. And when I was running, when I opened Danielle, the first year, I opened my catering company called Feast and Fête. And Feast and Fête was with a partner, Jean-Christophe. And that was an extension of services from Danielle already. And it still exists today. And we are very busy doing wonderful events. And it has never been a mega catering company. We didn't want to compete for the cheap buffet. We just wanted to make sure we were doing fine work and keep good relationship with our customer. And then I opened Paya Patisserie and Bistro after a couple of years because François Paya was with me at Daniel, and he really wanted to open a patisserie, and I wanted to open a bistro. So we did Patisserie Bistro. We stayed partner for 2.5 years. Then I let him buy his name and buy his business. And then I moved to Daniel, today, mm-hmm. and created Café Boulu. And ironically, when I sent the invitation 25 years ago, 26 years ago, of the opening of the first Daniel, I sent a picture of the old Café Boulu of my family in 1900 as a teaser. And then on the back, it was announcing Restaurant Daniel. And 5 years later, I was opening Café Boulu right there instead of Daniel. So it was kind of special. And when we closed the restaurant, the last service, I wanted to raise money for City Milan Wheel. And I did a small gala. And then when I reopened Daniel, the first week of March 1999, I invited all my mentors. So Nandron from Lyon, Paul Bocuse, Michel Guérard, Roger Verger, Georges Blanc. I invited them and said, you bring your white for the pictures and your tux for the party. I'm going to do the cooking. You have nothing to do. I just want to say thank you to you. And I brought them in, and that was the first gala fundraising for City Milan Wheel at Daniel 20 years ago. And since then, every year we have a gala, and the one we did lately was 2 weeks ago. And we raised $850,000 with a small amount of people. So it has been quite substantial. And City Milan Wheel is celebrating this year its 60 million meals served in New York. It's so impressive.
It's incredible. I had Gail Green on my show.
Yes,
and we talked about it.
And Gail is a founder.
Yeah.
And we have so much respect for Gail and James Beard and the people at the time in the early 80s who felt and there was such a need to be able to take care of their community and also the elderly of New York City. So City Milan Wheel is close to my heart. And at Daniel every year, we excel in this year. Every year I bring special chefs for that. Like the way I brought my mentor 20 years mm-hmm. ago, I've been bringing chefs all year long. And this year I brought Neil Perry from Australia at the Rockpool Group, very famous chef.
I've been to Rockpool.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in Sydney.
Cool. There,
yeah.
And fantastic. And then I brought also Dale Roberts, who is from the Test Kitchen in Cape Town, South Africa. And I brought Pedro Bargero from Chile in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And César Troigros from France. The young César Troigros, first generation of Troigros. And they all cook for the gala this year. So it was kind of super fun and very successful. And I'm very thankful for the generosity of many New Yorkers who support City Meal.
It's incredible. Let me ask you my question for my last guest. So at episode 209, I had on Chef J.J. Johnson. He's the founder of Engrade Hospitality Concepts, including Henry at the Life Hotel in Nomad and Field Trip, a rice concept opening in Harlem. And give him a shout out, his book, Between Harlem and Heaven, was nominated today for James Beard Foundation Award, which is cool.
Superb.
So we're going to play it back. Because we're very fancy here at Heritage Radio. So here's his question.
Who mentored Daniel in his growth time of his career? And when I'm saying growth, not in his cooking growth, but in his restaurant growth. When did he know was the right time to open the next restaurant, do this concept, go from fine dining to casual dining, go from casual dining to quick service? Go from New York to Boston. Like, who was helping him along the way? There's no way that he was doing that on his own. Of course, he had some gut intuition of where to go mm-hmm. and deals, but I would love to know who was helping him along the way and when did he know was the right time to expand his empire?
Well, I think it's a very good question, and it's true. And sometimes, you know, you always look at the chef and you always look at the accomplishment you have done personally and all that. But it takes a team, it takes an army, and you build that army. And I have very loyal people working with me, and you grow that carefully. I was very lucky when I started 26 years ago. I was trying to raise about $2 million, and it was in portion of $200,000, and I had about 10 people in mind who could maybe help me raise that money. And I was at the six investors, and I met Joel Smilo. He was just retiring as a CEO of Playtex and other companies. He had been there for 40 years or 30 years, and since he was very young, and he just retired. And he sat down with me after my pitch and trying to convince him to give me $200,000. And he said, you know, I'll take the risk. I'd rather be the only one than one of them, because I think it'd be better to work together like that. And so Joel signed up, and his niece, niece-in-law, Lily Linton, who was a longtime friend and put me in touch with Joel, has always been also a minority partner, but a majority health supporter. And so she's a Harvard graduate and a businesswoman. And so Lily play a huge role also into that. And Brett Trucy, who is with me as a COO today, started as the director of operation. But interestingly enough, Brett started with me at the Plaza Athénée, then he went to Cornell. As a student, he came to Le Cirque to do his externship in the kitchen. And then he went on to work in hotels, different places, including the Palace where Le Cirque just moved. And I pulled him off the Palace when he was director of all the food and beverage there. And he came to work with me, and we have been together for 21 years. And then from there, it's Michael Lawrence, who started as an assistant manager and is the director of operation. And there is Pierre Siu, who started as a bus boy and today is director of operation. And so there's many, you know, the chef, Jean-Francois, we have been 23 years together, and he became the chef at DB Bistro the first time. And the chef I choose, I opened Café Voulu, and I put Andrew Carmelini there as a chef. That was his first job as a chef. And I took the risk with him. It was recommended by Brett Trucy. And Andrew, within a year and a half, he won already Rising Star Chef by James Beard. Against all over America, young chef under 30, he made the top and win. Now, 6 years later, Andrew leave, and a new chef come in, Gavin Kaysen, and within a year and a half, he won Rising Star Chef in America, under 30, also best chef, young chef in America. And I think many opportunities like this have been given to the chef to be able to not only distinguish themselves, but for me, give them the power to be able to have the right stage for them to succeed. And I think that's this combination of talent. It don't matter who you are and what you do. When you create multi-business, you need people with you. And does not mean they always stay forever, but does not mean that it's a bad thing to change. It's sometimes harder to change. It hurt, sometimes emotionally, sometimes physically, but it's good because it help you refresh. It help you reset sometime, and it help you look at, you know, a different direction. And does not mean you don't make mistakes sometime in life. You know, you go and open a restaurant with the wrong people, pull back, too bad, move on.
Right.
You know, I don't think life is, you know, I didn't plan to have so many restaurants. I didn't think I was going to have so many restaurants, but I'm still motivated to do more. And like I'm working on a new project now at One Vanderbilt, which is a new tower going right next to Grand Central. And between Madison Avenue and Grand Central. And this tower will be one of the most majestic new development in New York. There'll be only one restaurant there. And it's, of course, a commercial tower with maybe 8,000 people working above. So it's going to be a new project, very different from anything I've done so far. And I think quite motivating for me to, you know, create something like that again.
As you're speaking, I had so many questions along the way, but you pretty much answered them, because I was wondering, I've never been someone who's a planner, but I'm a doer, and I like to be busy. I definitely get the vibe from you. You like to be busy, and you're always pushing forward, and things are always moving and developing, and it's constant. It's very incredible.
And I think in New York, you know, I take the financial risk. I take everything. In Washington, D.C. also, we have DBGB there, which is our own restaurant. And then in other places, Boston, Montreal, Toronto, Miami, Palm Beach, Singapore, London, we have partners often with hotels or with operator. And it's great. It's, you know, partnership. Work, you got to give a lot for them, and they are usually generous with it. But it's an opportunity not to leverage yourself financially so much, and yet you can keep expanding your brand as well.
Well, you've certainly done that. We're going to take another break. Before we do, just give a mention. Brett Trousey came on my radio show.
Oh,
episode 79. If people want to look. Go back and listen to the archives. We definitely talked about you.
I'm sure.
Okay, so we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to play my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Danielle Ballou. It's time for my speed round game. What this is I name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Chocolate.
All right. You did very good in the test one. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in now, because I have young kids. So eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
My lunch was tasting, but a la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plate.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
French style, all-inclusive.
Easy. Wearing chef whites or wearing a suit or a tux?
Chef white.
Yeah, figured you might say that, but you always look very dapper in whatever you're wearing. Okay, giving toasts on top of bars or having someone toast you up in their skybox in Danielle?
Both.
You're very good at toasting on top of bars. I've seen you do that several times.
I'm not doing that with social media anymore. I don't want to get caught being in trouble.
Oh, no, it's ruined it. But no, you're fabulous at it. I hope it doesn't go away. Okay, two more.
Cheese. In my own place.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Both.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Lyon?
Manhattan.
Manhattan. There you go. That's the game. Very good.
Manhattan has been, and I would say, you know, I'm in the same zip code since I arrived in New York City. And I feel like the biggest gift I received from my zip code is that when they made the Second Avenue subway, the new line, the Q line, they put a station on 72nd Street and 2nd Avenue, and they commissioned Vic Muniz, who actually has a studio in Brooklyn, not too far, a Brazilian artist, to do the mosaic work around the stations. And Vic one day say, I need to take a picture of you. So he took a picture of me, and I discovered that I was to put myself on the wall of the subway in New York. And I'm going to be there for the next 200 years, maybe. So that's good.
It's very cool. And I've seen it. It's quite an honor.
It's a life size. Myself holding a bag with some fish and vegetables and coming back from the market and eating in.
It makes commuting, it adds a little, you know, joy to the commute. You get to walk by and see you.
So right.
That is very special. Okay, so let's talk some industry news. Today, this morning, the James Beard Foundation announced its nominees for 2019.
I don't have the list yet.
I have the list here. I have so many pieces of paper here because I have the list and I have your whole resume and everything. Well, here's.
Can I see the list?
Well,
I'm gonna check out a few things.
Here you go. So some of it. Yeah. I don't know if you're gonna be. We can talk about so many things. Well, first of all, you've received 6 James Beard Foundation Awards.
We also receive service. We receive wine service.
And people that work for you and with you.
Yeah. Personally, I receive Best Chef New York, Best Chef in America, Best Restaurateur. Then we had I had many pastry chefs, Jacques Torres, François Payard, Gaia Oliveira, who received those during their tenure. Many sommeliers will receive the wine service. So James Beard is definitely the most, I think, the most powerful and the most meaningful reward you can get as a professional. And I think for young chef, of course, now there's Michelin in America and there's many other barometers of success or recognition. But I think the James Beard is still the one who help any region in America, any place, anywhere where there's talent, James Beard will go and pull it off. And I think that's beautiful. And also in the field of trade, in our trade, in a different, different background, like bakers and pastry chef and restaurateur and wine and bartenders now. And so it's the kaleidoscope of reward and what it means for, you know, someone from Austin to win against America's best talent. That's big.
It's huge. And I was watching the live feed this morning and give a shout out to Piché Ong, who is a good friend of mine,
Sweet.
Who I'm also working with. He is now the pastry chef at Brothers and Sisters in Washington, D.C. At the Line Hotel. And he was nominated for Outstanding Pastry Chef. So super excited for him. I mean, there's so many people on the list. And
I think that what's beautiful is the list keep growing with national talent, which you never heard of so many great chefs in Minneapolis, for example, where Gavin Kaysen is today. And he has his pastry chef there now, who's also voted in the list. And so, you know, the opportunity for young chefs to go back home And to be able to shine on the national stage, it's huge.
And
if Michelin goes to Minneapolis, then he shine on the international stage. And that's, you know, even bigger.
Yeah, no, I've been going to the James Beard Awards for, I don't know how many years, at least a dozen. I've been going to Chicago every year, planning to go back this coming year. Mm-hmm.
I'll be there.
Yeah, it's great. I love being part of the celebration, and it's, you know, it's quite an honor. I'm very happy, you know, people should go online, check out the entire list.
The big one is like this year, Outstanding Chef. So Outstanding Chef, it's really, I think you have to have a minimum of a certain amount of year, but it's a national thing, and you have some of the finest chef like Corey Lee or David Kinch, or yeah, Donald Link, Mark Vetri from Philadelphia. Yeah. Actually, interestingly enough, there is no New Yorker.
I did notice that.
And there is Ashley also. Ashley Christensen from Raleigh, North Carolina, which is fantastic.
But I saw Ellen Yin is on the list for Outstanding Restaurateur. She's from Philadelphia and New York, which she was nominated last year too.
Outstanding Restaurateur, yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, there's...
So is Ken Oranger, and there's some great list. But, you know, today is not all about New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago. It's not about America, and I think that... when they started the James Beard, I don't think they could imagine where we are today with the talent and where it is and how well scattered it is today.
True. So stay tuned. The awards are May 6th in Chicago. That's the Chef and Restaurant Awards. And then the Media Journalism Awards are going to be in New York on April 26th. So congratulations to everyone. We're going to take another break and come back. I'm going to do my speed round. I'm going to do my solo dining experience, and we'll have the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Chez L'Ami Jean, and you're going to have to pardon my pronunciation of French, but that is the restaurant, and here's the rundown. The location, 27 Rue Mallard, 7th Arrondissement, Paris, France. The concept, a lively Basque bistro. The chef and owner, Stéphane Jago. So why did I go? Because my guest today, Danielle, had recommended it to me, and I also heard of it from a few other industry friends, but really it was Danielle's recommendation. So my experience. I had a late reservation for one on a Saturday in November when I was in Paris. It was at 8:45. I arrived. My table was not ready yet. They were super apologetic and super cool. I mean, the server moved around really quickly to clear off the bar, so I had a place to sit, offered me some charcuterie and something to drink. It was I felt the fun, lovely energy as soon as I entered. I waited about 20 minutes for my table to be ready, and then my feast began. So what did I get? I had the charcuterie while I was waiting, as I mentioned. I also had the famous Parmesan soup with house-made bread and butter. I had sweetbreads with mashed potatoes and famous rice pudding with caramel sauce. So my take? Wow. Rich and decadent soup filled with bits of deliciousness. It was really quite an amazing Parmesan soup. And the sweetbreads were perfectly cooked, really flavorful, balanced well with these silky, smooth, whipped potatoes. And then the finale was this bread pudding, which is ginormous, and it just was sinful. So the ambiance, it's a lively, intimate bistro setting. You can see the kitchen in the back through the dining room. I'd say it's perfect for a fun and indulgent group night out. Interesting tidbit. It is the oldest Basque restaurant in Paris, having opened in 1931, and it has been helmed by Brittany-born Stéphane since 2002. Personal fun fact. So pre-dinner, this was the night I talked about it on my episode 198, how I had oysters at Hooterie Regis, and that was my pre-dinner, and then I walked over to the restaurant for my late dinner, and I have to say, I looked at how much walking I did in Paris, and I was doing about 10 miles a day, so that is one way I exercise while I'm traveling. So the cost was $90, that's including everything and converted to U.S. dollars. Would I go back? Yes, I would, and the website is leamijean.fr. So there you go. What'd you think?
We say la mijean in French.
Yeah, I know. I know. I almost wasn't going to talk about it because I was like, I'm butchering.
No, no, it's very good. Absolutely. No, no, but you did such a good portrait of what the place is about. And it's amazing. It's one of this generation of chefs who kind of launched the bistronomy in Paris. And is a character, and sometimes he can get mad in the kitchen, and nobody should get scared. It's only the chef getting mad at himself sometimes.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, as someone who does dine solo a lot, this was one of my most fun solo dining experiences, just based on everyone that worked there and the energy. They were just, everyone had, was, it was fun, and the food was absolutely delicious. So. It was an excellent recommendation.
And it's the kind of place you can trust the chef, you can trust the service. The service is super cash, but super pro. Mm-hmm. And the wine is inexpensive, but well curated. I mean, and the food is so soulful. It's tasty. Mm-hmm.
It is. So check it out if you're in Paris. Okay, so it's time for the final question. My next guest is Hunter Lewis. He is the editor-in-chief at Food & Wine magazine. And actually, we should mention this, how back was 1988 that you were the first recipient of Food & Wine.
Yeah, somewhere there, 87, 88. Yeah, I was the first recipient of the 10 Best Chef, yeah.
With Thomas Keller, and there's a few people. Yeah, absolutely. No, that was one of the accolades.
Dean Faring from Texas and...
was Rick Bayless? Was that
Rick
one?
Bayless okay. was there also, and I think Hubert Keller also from San Francisco, and it was a fun bunch.
Yeah, so that's incredible. I always think that list just it marks or
iconic. Exactly.
Yeah, I think it really spots amazing chefs. The fact that you were the first year,
very much, and it kind of like. Gave a new spin to and a meaning to this new generation. It was like setting us up as a group versus it didn't exist before. You know, even if there was already Wolfgang and there was already a lot of chefs in America, Larry Forgione and all that, but then we were almost like not a generation, but you know, a couple of years behind, so a little younger. And it was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So my next guest is Hunter Lewis, who's now the editor-in-chief at Food & Wine. So what would you like to ask Hunter?
Well, I think, you know, the Food and Wine keep also evolving, growing into his readership. And what I like is, would they keep extending the publishing side, or do you think for him social media is much more important and communication or the reach out to their consumer? Is it better through either not only social media but media platform such as phone or computers, right, or versus print? I that's one question, because I think we all want to keep the print alive and well, and we all try to find time to read prints. And for me, it's not the same. The aspiration I get reading in prints versus flipping on a phone, too much information. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
and also Food and Wine, you know, they have always done Best New Chef, which is great. But would they do, like James Beard, more recognition for other things than chef, such as, you know, best new pastry chef, best new bakers, best new
other categories.
Other categories. And okay. I think many great chefs in America never made it to the Best New Chef. But that's not mean that they weren't either qualified, or maybe they weren't so obvious,
right,
but still doing fantastic things. I mean, today I was at the restaurant Gabrielle, and I think he did the Best New Chef. I don't remember the year, but
I think they won something last year.
Yeah, also.
Yeah.
Gabrielle Quarter, that was fantastic. And you know, Food and Wine, I'm not a home consumer, I'm not a house cook, so I don't always look at it the same purpose than maybe someone who cook at home and eagerly await for the magazine to come to see what they could be inspired by. But it has always been very stimulating to see how well they keep up with actual evolution in food. And
true. Mm-hmm. So I have one more question before we end the show. Do you ever get tired? You seem to have like an abundant amount of endless energy.
Yeah, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm trying to learn to quit work, and that's the hardest part.
Good luck with that.
I get tired sometimes, especially, I mean, traveling sometimes with jet lag. That's very difficult. Yeah. Like this morning, I just came back from Europe. I went to see my parents last weekend. So I came back 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And this morning, I went to bed late. But this morning, I was up at 6:15. I said, God, am I going to go back to sleep now? So I got up, I went to the gym, and then I have young kid who get me out of bed by 8:15. Yeah. So I was back home just as they were getting up.
It's I'm in awe of you. I just have to say, I'm so honored that you spent this 45 minutes plus with me today on.
Thank you, Sherry.
On Heritage Radio, and I wish you continued success in everything you do. I don't think you need it.
Well,
but
keep doing what you do, because I think that does a lot for our profession and for the people who dream about food and people who try to understand why we choose to do what we do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. My guest today has been Danielle Ballou. He is a legendary chef and restaurateur. His restaurant group is the Dynex Group. You can go and learn all about him. Go to his website, danielleballou.com, and follow him on social media at Danielle Ballou. Follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Website's bayerpublicrelations.com and sherrybayer.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Amanda, and thanks again to Danielle. Just heads up, next week I'm going to do a special on-the-road episode from my coverage at South Beach Wine and Food Festival. I have interviews with Matthew Acarino, John Tizar, and Adina Sussman. And then the following week, Wednesday, April 10th at 4 p.m., my guest will be Hunter Lewis of Food and Wine. So I hope you'll tune in. Thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thank you.
Gotta see what's down that road. Buddy, you ain't gonna see nothing but the seeds you sow.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.